Welcome to a Christmas edition of Tuned to Yesterday, delivering programs from radio's yesteryear. I'm your host, Mark Levenier. In this hour, two programs aired on the same network on the same night, Christmas Eve 1946. Later on, we'll hear Rudy Valley, but right now it's Fibber McGee and Molly, part of NBC's Tuesday night lineup at 9:30. Over 20 million people tuned in to this Christmas Eve broadcast with Jim and Marion Jordan.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly. The makers of Johnson's Wax products for home and industry present Fibber McGee and Molly with Bill Thompson, Gail Gordon, Arthur Q. Bryan, Dee Benaderet, and me, Harlow Wilcox. The script is by Don Quinn and Phil Leslie. Music by the Kingsmen and Billy Mills Orchestra. It isn't very often that we have the privilege of coming into your home on Christmas Eve. In fact, we figured it out this morning and discovered that it's happened only 3 times in the past 11 years. Well, that makes tonight a very special occasion for all of us on the show and for the makers of Johnson's Wax. So, on behalf of Fibber and Molly and all the rest of us, here's hoping you have a very happy holiday season. We take you now to the Wistful Vista branch of Santa Claus Incorporated, where we find one of St. Nick's little helpers hard at work. He's got a room full of broken toys, a handful of broken tools, and a future full of broken fingers.
Ow! Get rested.
This touching scene has been repeated at intervals all week. And all Mrs. McGee can say right now is...
Oh, dear.
As we join Fibber McGee and Molly.
How's it coming, McGee? Got many more toys to fix?
Many more to fix. My gosh, yes. About 150.
All together?
About 5 of them are all together. The other 145 are all apart. But I can do it. Now, look. You see this little music box? I think I got this fixed.
Oh, play it.
Okay. Well, I wind it up. Listen to this. Pretty, huh?
What was it?
Silent Night.
Look, dearie, doesn't Mother's eager little beaver think his bright little teeth have bitten off more than they can chew this time?
No, I got plenty of time. They don't have to be ready till the day before Christmas.
I've got a TL for you, McGee.
Huh?
This is the day before Christmas.
What?
It is? Sure.
Oh, my gosh, I got to get busy. Hand me that chisel and a handful of nails. Thanks. Now, let me see. What'll I work on next?
How about this thirsty little coaster wagon with its tongue hanging out?
It needs a new front wheel. I thought maybe if I took a wheel off of this tricycle and made a bicycle out of it, then took the frame off the bicycle and made a scooter out of it, I could use the saddle for this hobby horse, which would give me an extra pair of handlebars, which I could use for... What could I make out of sports bars? Well, I'll think of something. Hey, did you see how I fixed up this little toy carpet sweeper?
No. Does it work?
Oh, I'll say it works. Look. You push it forward, picks up the dirt.
Amazing.
Pull it backwards, it throws the dirt out again. That way, the kid can use the same dirt all day long. Don't have to keep running outdoors for fresh dirt. I think that's a very good idea.
Come in. Well, for goodness sakes, Mr. Wimple.
Hello, Pink.
Hi, Wimp, old man. You better not sit down any place unless you've been vaccinated against Hacksaw Blades.
Well, I can't say but only if... My gracious, look at all the toys. Aren't you ashamed, Mr. McGee?
No, what for?
Opening all your presents before Christmas?
Oh, those aren't his, Mr. Wimple. He's repairing them for children who might not otherwise get any. The school is in charge of distribution.
Isn't that nice?
Yes.
You must be very handy with tools, Mr. McGee.
You said it, boy. Why, when I was... Hey, what's that book you got under your arm there, Wimp? If that's zombie comics, can I borrow it when you get through?
No, this is just my bird book, Miss Evie.
Your what, Mr. Wimple?
My bird book. I've been out watching birds today.
Oh.
I saw a barn swallow, and I'm going to write a nasty letter to the book publisher.
Wrong picture, Mr. Wimple?
No, but they can't tell me a teensy-weensy little bird like that can swallow a barn.
They don't really eat barns, Wimp. They just peck the grain out of the wood.
Yeah.
Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell.
Well, anyway, I think I'm going to get my notes together and write my own bird book.
Does Mrs. Wimple go with you on those bird-watching expeditions, Mr. Wimple?
Oh, no. Sweetie Face, that's my big old wife. She doesn't. Oh, that reminds me, Mr. McGee. Have you got a shotgun I can borrow?
Why, certainly he has, Mr. Wimple. But do bird lovers go hunting?
Maybe not, Mrs. McGee. But this is for something I've been planning to do every Christmas for 10 years.
Huh?
I'm going to get up early in the morning and shoot Sweetie Face.
What?
No.
Yes, I am. I'm going to get up early in the morning and shoot Sweetie Face a wild duck for Christmas dinner. Merry Christmas, folks.
Well, McGee, I don't like to nag, but hadn't you better get busy with those toys? You haven't much time left, you know.
My gosh, I haven't at that. Now, let me see. I think so I'll fix up this dollhouse. The roof sags like a restaurant pie. Hand me that hammer, and I'll have this thing fixed before...
Excuse me, folks. I forgot my bird book. Oh, here it is.
he'd forget his head if it wasn't fastened on. And with Sweetie Face around, I'm surprised it still is.
Me too. Where's my hammer? I gotta fix this dollhouse.
Here now, and be careful. You only have 7 good fingers left.
Okay. I can take care. Oh, I had a little rabbit, and I wish I had her still. She was good for 18 carats, so I called her Diamond Lil. Oh, there was no...
Oh, dear.
Look at that dollhouse.
If I ever have any toys to be repaired, sweetheart, I hope I can remember to tear up your phone number.
This is discouraging, you know what? All them little kids depending on me to fix these toys, and here it is almost time to have...
Come in. Oh, my goodness, Mrs. Carstairs. Do come in, Millicent.
How do you do, my dear? Good day, Miss McGee.
Hi, Carsty. Don't trip over that kitty car there. You're liable to wind up with your head through a drum.
Good heavens, what a tremendous lot of toys.
Yep.
Did they belong to your father?
His father? Why did you ask, Millicent?
Well, I just thought that no child could cause that much destruction in one generation.
These are not my toys, Millicent. And in the second place, I was not a destructive child. Why, I still got a little box camera I was given in 1913.
Does it still work, McGee?
Yeah, it works all right, but I don't use it. It's too dangerous.
Dangerous?
Yeah. Cuts everybody's head off.
But what may I ask are you doing with all these toys, Miss McGee?
Well, the school collected them, Millicent, and McGee was to fix them up for the more unfortunate children.
Oh, what a splendid idea. I find myself revising my opinion of you, Mr. McGee. This is a side of your character I had not suspected.
Oh, you'd be surprised, Millicent. His character has more strange sides than a Calypso album.
No, this is nothing any red-blooded American boy wouldn't have done if he'd stuck his big fat neck out like I did.
But what a tremendous job you have to do in such a short time, Mr. McGee. Well, this toy trumpet, for instance. Can you straighten this out?
Well, not knowing how to play a trumpet in the first place, he probably wouldn't know when it was fixed, Millicent.
Oh, well, perhaps I can help. I once played trumpet in the orchestra at Wellesley. Let me take it.
Oh, fine. Here, Carsty. Pucker up and have a go at the blues, sugar. I mean, the sugar blues. The sugar blues.
Sugar blues is more of a trombone number, Mr. McGee.
Oh.
I'll try the 12th Street rag. Although I'm afraid my embouchure is not what it was.
Oh, I don't know. With a fur coat on it.
McGee!
Go ahead, Carsty.
Very well.
What? Why, Millie, that was lovely.
My gosh, that trumpet don't need fixing. That's in fine shape.
Thank you. And now, if you'll excuse me, I must go down to the Maritime Union headquarters and get Mr. Carstairs' Christmas present.
To the Maritime Union for a Christmas present?
Yes, I'm getting him a new crew for his yacht. Well, Merry Christmas to both of you.
Thank you.
You know, dearie, she's right. The time is awfully short to do much about these toys.
I know it. Maybe if I work fast, I'll... Oh, my tools are no good, you know. Look at them. The chisel is nicked, the pliers are falling apart, and the hammer is looser in the head than I am. I got to get down to the hardware store quick and get some new tools. Where's my hat and coat? Where's that bait can I was hiding my money in?
Well, now, if you can't remember where you hide your money, dearie, I'm sure
I... Oh, I remember. It's right here behind the dictionary. Here it is. Well, I got to get going. Well, I'll see you later. Goodbye.
Wait a minute. You didn't kiss me.
Huh? Oh. Goodbye.
Ah, there goes the good kid. And who does he think he's fooling?
What a Christmas this is going to be. Shiver McGee, the dope of the ages. What a sap. What a husband. Somebody ought to put a Santa Claus suit on me and drop me down in the chimney of a blast furnace. Oh, wait a minute, McGee. What are you going to tell her? Are you going to tell her you spent all your Christmas money for new toys?
My gosh, I don't know.
Well, you got to say something.
Oh, yeah?
The reason I got into this mess is by talking too much. I know, but what are you going to do now?
Gee, I don't know.
Well, think.
I am thinking.
The only thing to do is to stall, boy. Stall for time.
Okay, that's my only option. I'll stall.
That's you, McGee?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was the hardware store open?
Yeah, it was open.
That's nice. There's some hot coffee on the stove if you want some.
Thanks, kiddo. Well, why don't she ask me? Let's get it over with.
Here's a Christmas card from Aunt Sarah.
Oh, yeah, I'll bet there's postage due on it. That old dame is so tight she couldn't put on her hat without lifting herself off the floor.
Well, you got it wrong this time, sweetheart. You know what? She sent us a $500 check for Christmas.
What? She did? $500?
That's right. And she said if the Republicans are elected in 1948, she'll sign it.
Well, come on, McGee. Why don't you tell her, you big ape? You yellow or something? Molly, I got something to tell you.
All right, dearie. What is it?
I
Tell me later, McGee. Come in. Oh, for goodness sakes, it's the mayor, McGee. Hello, Your Honor.
Good evening, Molly. Hello, McGee.
Hi, Latrib, old man. Merry Christmas.
And the same to both of you. McGee, I just dropped by to tell you how grateful the school commissioners are for this toy-mending project you've undertaken.
Oh, he loved doing it, Mr. Mayor. Just give himself here a handful of tools and he'll chisel, chisel, chisel all day long.
Yeah, but on this toy deal, Latrib, I...
Believe me, McGee, when Miss Yegley told me all about it and that you'd volunteered to repair all those toys, I was touched.
You were touched?
Just look how he fixed this coaster wagon, Mr. Mayor. He couldn't repair the wheels, so he put four holes in the bottom of it so two children with roller skates on could stick their feet through it. I thought it was very ingenious myself.
Yeah, but that was...
By the way, may I help deliver any of these things, McGee? How about this electric train? Is that finished?
Oh, he did a wonderful job rewiring that little train, Mr. Mayor. McGee, show the mayor how when you throw the signal switch, the train jumps the track and rolls over three times.
Oh, I'll have to admit, I'm not much with electric stuff. I even get nervous handling a wire coat hanger. But it don't matter now, Latrib, because what I do...
But as I say, McGee, I'll be glad to deliver any of this stuff for you. How about this sled here?
No, no, Your Honor, I don't believe
No, not that sled, Latrib. You don't try to pick up
don't
that...
Don't talk nonsense, McGee.
No,
if
no.
If a child can handle this, I'm sure I won't
no.
have any trouble. Oh, my back. I've broken my back.
Well, we warned you, Mr. Mayor.
What's that sled made of, lead?
No. I was putting some new runners on it, Latrib, but the nails were too long, and I nailed it to the floor. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's quite all right. I'll let you know how my X-rays come out. Merry Christmas.
Look at the poor man walking up the street, McGee, all bent over, like he was looking for four-leaf clovers.
Well, I told him not to pick up that sled, but this being not election time, he don't listen to the common people.
See, what was it you started to tell me before he came in, McGee?
I feel like a mug telling you this, Molly, but... Well, I was...
Oh, stop scraping your foot on the carpet and tell me.
Okay. Well, when I got downtown with my Christmas money...
Merry Christmas, Molly. Happy New Year, pal.
Hello, Mr. Wilcox. The same to you.
Rushing the season a little with that New Year stuff, aren't you, Junior?
Well, I thought I'd throw that in early because I won't be seeing you next week.
Oh, that's right. You won't, will you? Sitting here next Tuesday night listening to Fred Waring, we'll miss you, Mr. Wilcox.
Thank you, Molly. Will you miss me too, pal?
I don't trust myself to talk, Junior. The very thought of you not dropping in here next Tuesday just kind of overwhelms me.
Yeah, if he starts turning handsprings, Mr. Wilcox, you'll know it's strictly from grief.
I know what you mean. I think that's a great idea, though, bringing Fred Waring and that wonderful music of his back for a week.
Yeah, me and Molly and the people in Racine thought it would be kind of a nice New Year's greeting to everyone if we asked Fred to take over the Johnson Wax program for next week.
Mr. Waring and his Pennsylvanians will sort of express musically our New Year wish for our friends, Mr. Wilcox.
Well, I'm going to love it. Tuesday nights, I don't get much chance to listen anyhow to a good musical. Oh, hey, look at all the toys. Say, I'll swap you a good jackknife for that musical top, pal. And I'll throw in a ball of kite string, too.
No deal, Junior. This stuff isn't mine. I've been trying to fix it up for the kids around town. Without much success, I might add.
You might indeed. Look at the dollhouse, Mr. Wilcox. He was fixing the roof on it and suddenly found his elbows in the basement.
That's because I'm a clumsy oaf. If I'd only kept my...
What are you doing, Mr. Wilcox?
Just writing a little note.
A note?
Yes, to the little girl who gets this dollhouse. Mind if I shove it under the door here?
Not at all. Mind if we read it first?
Not at all. Go ahead.
Let's see. To the little girl who gets this lovely dollhouse. When you grow up and have a real house of your own, don't forget to keep it beautiful and clean with Johnson's Wax product. Signed, a friend.
Ah.
Isn't that sweet?
A friend. My goodness. That's the first anonymous letter I ever saw that was constructed.
Yep. Well, I'll see you a week from Tuesday, folks. Happy Yuletide.
Same to you, Mr. Wilcox.
Old Waxy never quits, does he?
McGee, you started to tell me something, you know.
Oh, yeah. I was trying to tell you what... I feel awful about this, kiddo, but...
Was it something about the toys, dearie?
Yeah. It was, yeah. Now, look. When I took my Christmas money...
This is like reading a continued story in a monthly magazine. Come in.
Merry Christmas, my dear, and a cheery Yuletide greeting to you, too, Jingle Brain.
Hello, Dr. Gamble. Nice to see you.
Well, if it isn't the mortician's friend. Hi, Sulfa Huckster.
What are you doing with all the toys, Beaver Bottom? Been hijacking Santa Claus?
Well, he undertook to repair them for some children for Christmas, Doctor.
You don't say. I'll have to tear up that article I was writing about him for the medical journal. Maybe he does have a heart.
I've paid you enough dough to listen to it, butcher boy. And what are you doing out on Christmas Eve? Not that your absence from the hospital is not a splendid gift to the sick.
Business a little dull, Doctor?
Yes, it is, rather. Ordinarily, I'm busy Christmas Eve pulling fat fathers out of fireplaces or treating them for burned noses. They never seem to learn that long white beards light up quicker than a cigarette. By the way, what are you two doing New Year's Eve?
Going to spend a quiet evening right here in front of the fireplace, Tonsil Peaker. Cracking jokes and walnuts. Why?
I have reservations at a nightclub if you'd care to join me.
Well, thank you so much, Doctor, but we want to stay in that night and listen to Fred Waring.
Fred Waring? Something special?
Yeah, he's going to be on the air for Johnson's Wax next Tuesday night at the same time, Pat.
It's going to be a novelty for radio, Doctor. A singing program, a spoken commercial.
That I shall have to hear. I'll tear up my reservations and join you, if I may.
Pray do, Doctor. And bring your medicine bag. I always eat too much caramel popcorn on New Year's Eve.
I'll be there with full equipment, Glutton Button. Although I'll probably be called out a few times during the evening.
Really, Doctor?
Yes, New Year's Eve, you know.
Oh, yeah.
People forget that slow gin and fast cars can be a poisonous combination.
Uh-huh.
As the head gets lighter on the neck, the foot gets heavier on the accelerator. Well, Merry Christmas.
Thank you, Doctor. Now that we got a minute alone, Molly, look. Remember when I grabbed that bait can with my dough in it and ran down to the hardware store?
Yeah.
Well, the fact is, Oh, this is going to make me look like an awful fool.
Now, sweetheart, when you fumbled that installment wedding ring on my finger, I took it for better or for worse.
Hmm.
Mostly it's been for the better, so you might as well average it up a little.
Well, okay. Here's the situation. When I realized I...
Say, maybe you better write me an inter-office memo, McGee.
Yeah.
Conversationally, we're not getting any place. Come in.
Oh, Alfred. Hi, Athene.
Hi, Miss McGee.
Athene's the one who talked me into fixing all these toys, Molly.
Yes, I know.
Sis, I owe you an explanation.
See, mister, you don't owe anybody anything, I bet you.
Huh?
I just ordered school and I saw all those toys. Oh, boy. Are they ever super, though? Just like new. Thanks ever so much, mister.
Well, I gotta spill this sometime, I guess. Sis, those toys are new. I bought them and had them sent over there.
Oh? You mean you couldn't fix the old ones, mister? Couldn't you? Couldn't you?
No. No, I couldn't. As a toy repairman, I'm about as handy as a turtle at a taffy pull. I flopped the assignment, sis.
You did not, I bet you. You were wonderful. Miss Yegley was so happy she cried.
You did?
Hmm?
I said she did.
Did what?
Cried.
Who?
Miss Yegley!
I know her. She said to thank you ever so much, mister.
That's okay, sis. Molly, that's what I've been trying to tell you.
Yes, I know, but what took you so long?
Oh, my gosh. I feel like a chump. I had to use the money I was saving for your Christmas present.
Oh, gee.
And you know what? When I opened that fake can, I found I had almost twice as much money saved as I thought.
Yes, dearie, I knew what you were up against, so I took the money I was going to buy your present with and put it in with yours.
What? You mean you knew I... Oh, but Molly, you won't get any presents.
Well, neither will you.
Huh?
And I think it's the nicest Christmas we ever had.
It ain't bad at that, is it?
Hey, gee, can I bring the boys in now, mister?
Huh? What boys?
The same boys that always sing for you on Christmas.
Oh, sure,
Ben. Hey, Johnny, Reddy, Buddy, Kenny, come on in, kids.
Merry Christmas,
Ah, dear, those kids haven't grown an inch since last year.
Now, you sit down there, Miss McGee. And, Mr. McGee, you sit over there.
Okay.
No, not at the piano. We're going to use that.
Oh.
All right, boys, are you ready? And a one, and a two, and a three.
That's your way to laugh. Like a ball full of jelly.
is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
Fibber McGee and Molly on Tuned to Yesterday from Christmas Eve, 1946 on NBC. It's an hour of Christmas shows on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. And now a program heard on the same network an hour and a half earlier. It's the Rudy Valley Show, heard at 8 p.m. on NBC on Christmas Eve, 1946. We'll enjoy it next with special guest actress Loretta Young.
The Rudy Valley Show.
There's no time like our time, and no one like you.
Hi-ho, everybody. This is Rudy Valley. Tonight's overture is, as it should be, in the Christmas spirit. And in this medley are two little Christmas songs that a bad little boy in a very small country school in Maine used to sing. Of course, I was only six then. So here's our medley based on Santa Claus is Coming to Town. Tonight should be entirely appropriate to the Christmas spirit, we felt that the Bob Mitchell Boy Choir would give us the musical feeling so appropriate to the old English tradition of Christmas carols and children's voices raised in song. You have seen them in many fine pictures, as they are one of the most outstanding aggregations of their kind. For their first tribute to the season, they offer the first Noel. It is the night before Christmas, as all of you know, and we're happy to find you tuned in to our show. So just sit yourself down in a comfortable chair and listen to words from a lady fair. It's a story that is tender, touching, but not sad, and at its conclusion should make you feel glad. Yes, every so often that intangible talent possessed by writers suddenly finds inspiration. Such was the case with Charles Taswell when he conceived his beautiful Christmas story, The Littlest Angel. Certainly a perfect blending of this inspired writing was evident when Loretta Young narrated the story for the Decca album. We feel proud and honored tonight that this lovely star is with us. We present Miss Loretta Young and The Littlest Angel.
Once upon a time, oh, many, many years ago, as time is calculated by men, but which was merely yesterday in the celestial calendar of heaven, there was in paradise a most miserable, thoroughly unhappy, and utterly dejected cherub, who was known throughout heaven as the Littlest Angel. He was exactly 4 years, 6 months, 5 days, 7 hours, and 42 minutes of age when he presented his small self to the venerable gatekeeper and waited for admittance to the glorious kingdom of God. Standing defiantly with his short brown legs wide apart, the littlest angel tried to pretend that he wasn't at all impressed by such unearthly splendor and that he wasn't at all afraid. But his lower lip trembled and a tear disgraced him by making a new furrow down his already tear-streaked face, coming to a sudden halt at the very tip of his small, freckled nose. But that wasn't all. While the kindly gatekeeper was entering the name in his great book, the littlest angel, having left home, as usual, without a handkerchief, endeavored to hide the telltale evidence by sniffling. Oh, a most unangelic sound, which so unnerved the good gatekeeper that he did something he'd never done before in all eternity. He blotted the page. From that moment on, the heavenly peace was never quite the same, and the littlest angel soon became the despair of all the heavenly host. His shrill, ear-splitting whistle sounded at all hours through the golden streets, which startled the patriarch prophets and disturbed their meditations. Yes, and on top of that, he inevitably and loudly sang off-key at the singing practice of the heavenly choir, and it was spoiling its ethereal effect. And being so small that it seemed to take him just twice as long as anyone else to get to nightly prayers, the littlest angel always arrived late and always knocked everyone's wings askew as he darted into his place. Although these flaws in his behavior might have been overlooked, the general appearance of the littlest angel was even more disreputable than his deportment. It was first whispered among the seraphim and cherubim, and then said aloud among the angels and the archangels that he didn't even look like an angel. And they were all quite correct. He didn't. His halo was permanently tarnished where he held on to it with one hot, chubby little hand when he ran, and he was always running. And furthermore, even when he stood very still, it never behaved like a halo should. It was always slipping down over his right eye, or over his left eye, or else just for pure meanness, slipping off the back of his head and rolling away down some golden street just so he'd have to chase after it. Yes, and it must be here recorded that his wings were neither useful nor ornamental. All paradise held its breath when the littlest angel perched himself like an unhappy fledgling sparrow on the very edge of a gilded cloud and prepared to take off. He would teeter this way and that way, and then after much coaxing and a few false starts, he would shut both of his eyes, hold his freckled nose, count up to 303, and then hurl himself slowly into space. However, owing to the regrettable fact that he always forgot to move his wings, the littlest angel always fell head over halo.
Oh, dear.
It was always reported, and never denied, that whenever he was nervous, which was most of the time, he bit his wingtips. Now, anyone can easily understand why the littlest angel would, sooner or late, have to be disciplined. And so, on an eternal day of an eternal month in the year eternal, he was directed to present his small self before an angel of the peace. The littlest angel combed his hair, dusted his wings, and scrambled into an almost clean robe, and then, with a heavy heart, trudged his way to the place of judgment. He tried to postpone the dreaded ordeal by loitering along the streets of the guardian angels, pausing a few timeless moments to minutely examine the long list of new arrivals, although all heaven knew that he couldn't read a word. And he idled more than several immortal moments to carefully examine a display of aureate harps. Although everyone in the celestial city knew that he couldn't tell a crotchet from a semiquaver. But at last and at length, he slowly approached a doorway which was surmounted by a pair of golden scales, signifying that heavenly justice was dispensed within. To the littlest angel's great surprise, he heard a voice singing.
Christ the Lord.
The littlest angel removed his halo and breathed upon it heavily, and then polished it upon his robe, a procedure which added nothing to that garment's already untidy appearance. And then tiptoed in. The singer, who was known as an understanding angel, looked down at the small culprit. The littlest angel instantly tried to make himself invisible by the ingenious process of withdrawing his head into the collar of his robe, very much like a snapping turtle. At that, the singer laughed, a jolly, heartwarming sound, and said, "Oh, so you're the one who's been making heaven so unheavenly. Well, come here, cherub, and tell me all about it." The littlest angel ventured a furtive look from beneath his robe, first one eye, and then the other eye. And then suddenly, almost before he knew it, he was perched on the lap of the understanding angel and was explaining how very difficult it was for a boy who suddenly finds himself transformed into an angel. Yes, and no matter what the archangel said, he'd only swung once on the... Well, twice. Oh, all right then. He'd swung three times on the Golden Gates. But that was just for something to do. That was the whole trouble. There wasn't anything for a small angel to do. And he was very homesick. Oh, not that paradise wasn't beautiful, but Earth was beautiful, too. Wasn't it created by God himself? Why, there were trees to climb, and brooks to fish, and caves to play at pirate chief, and the swimming hole, and sun, and rain, and dark, and dawn, and thick brown dust so soft and warm beneath your feet. The understanding angel smiled, and in his eye was a long-forgotten memory of another small boy in a long ago. Then he asked the small angel what would make him most happy in paradise. The cherub thought for a moment and whispered into his ear, "There's a box. I left it under my bed back home. If only I could have that." The understanding angel nodded his head. "You shall have it," he promised. And a fleet-winged heavenly messenger was instantly dispatched to bring the box to paradise. And then, in all those timeless days that followed, everyone wondered at the great change in the littlest angel. For among all the cherubs in God's kingdom, he was the most happy. His conduct was above the slightest reproach, and his appearance was all that the most fastidious could ask for. And on excursions to Elysian fields, it could be said, and truly said, that he flew like an angel. Then it came to pass that Jesus, the Son of God, was to be born of Mary of Bethlehem, of Judea. And so the glorious tidings spread through paradise. All the angels rejoiced, and their voices were lifted to herald the miracle of miracles, the coming of the Christ child. The angels and archangels, the seraphim and cherubim, the gatekeeper, the wingmaker, and yes, even the halo smith, they all put aside their usual tasks to prepare their gifts for the blessed infant. All but the littlest angel. He sat himself down on the topmost step of the golden stairs and anxiously waited for inspiration. What could he do that would be most acceptable to the Son of God? At one time, he dreamed of composing a lyric hymn of adoration. Oh, but the littlest angel was woefully wanting in musical talent. And then he grew tremendously excited over writing a prayer that would live forever in the hearts of men, because it would be the first prayer ever to be heard by the Christ child.
Amen. Amen. Hallelujah. Amen.
But the littlest angel was lamentably lacking in literate skill. What, oh, what could a small angel give that would please the holy infant? The time of the miracle was very close at hand when the littlest angel at last decided on his gift. And then, on that day of days, he proudly brought it from his hiding place behind a cloud, and humbly, with downcast eyes, placed it before the throne of God. It was only a small, rough, unsightly box, but inside were all those wonderful things that even a child of God would treasure. Small, rough, unsightly box, lying among all those other glorious gifts from all the angels of paradise. Gifts of such rare and radiant splendor and breathless beauty that heaven and all the universe were lighted by the mere reflection of their glory. And when the littlest angel saw this, he suddenly knew that his gift to God's child was irreverent. And he devoutly wished that he might reclaim his shabby gift. It was ugly. It was worthless. Oh, if only he could hide it away from the sight of God before it was even noticed. But it was too late. The hand of God moved slowly over all that bright array of shining gifts, then paused, then dropped, then came to rest on the lowly gift of the littlest angel. The littlest angel trembled as the box was opened. And there, before the eyes of God and all his heavenly host was what he offered to the Christ child. And what was his gift to the blessed infant? Well, there was a butterfly with golden wings, captured one bright summer day on the high hills over Jerusalem, and a sky blue egg from a bird's nest in an olive tree that stood to shade his mother's kitchen door. Yes, and two white stones found on a muddy riverbank where he and his friends had played like small brown beavers. And at the bottom of the box, a limp, tooth-marked leather strap, once worn as a collar by his mongrel Todd, who had died as he had lived, in absolute love and infinite devotion. The littlest angel wept hot, bitter tears. For now he knew that instead of honoring the Son of God, he'd been most blasphemous. Oh, why had he ever thought the box was so wonderful? Why had he ever dreamed that such utterly useless things would be loved by the blessed infant? In frantic terror, he turned to run and hide from the divine wrath of the Heavenly Father, and he stumbled and fell, and with a horrified wail and a clatter of halo, rolled in a ball of consummate misery at the very foot of the heavenly throne. There was an ominous and dreadful silence in the celestial city. A silence complete and undisturbed, save for the heartbroken sobbing of the littlest angel. And then suddenly, the voice of God, like divine music, rose and swelled through paradise. And the voice of God spoke, saying, "Of all the gifts of all the angels, I find this small box pleases me the most. Its contents are of the earth and of men. My son is born to be king of both. These are the things that my son too will know and love and cherish and then, regretful, leave behind him when his task is done. I accept this gift in the name of child Jesus, born of Mary this night in Bethlehem." There was a breathless pause. And then the rough, unsightly box of the littlest angel began to glow with a bright, unearthly light. And then the light became a lustrous flame. And then the flame became a radiant brilliance that blinded the eyes of all the angels. None but the littlest angel saw it rise from its place before the throne of God. And he, and only he, watched it arch the firmament and stand and shed its clear, white, beckoning light over a stable where a child was born. There it shone on that night of miracles, and its light was reflected down the centuries deep in the heart of all mankind. And yet earthly eyes, blinded too by its splendor, could never know that the lowly gift of the littlest angel was what all men would call forever the shining star of Bethlehem.
Thank you, Loretta Young, for your wonderful Christmas story. What could be more appropriate to follow the littlest angel than the voices of the Bob Mitchell Boy Choir singing "An Old-Fashioned Christmas"?
When you used to string berries and popcorn to hang on the Christmas tree, when you spent an old-fashioned Christmas back home. Did they hide all the Christmas presents on a shelf where you couldn't see? When you spent an old-fashioned Christmas back home? Did you tell your mother you were wrapping her presents? Oh, please close her eyes. Did you tell your daddy that he mustn't look, 'cause you wanted him to be surprised? And did you get all excited and happy as you could?
could light a candle in the window and sing to you. Daddy'd sit before the fire and read you the story of how the Christmas star shone bright.
And somehow you can't forget it, for there's nothing where'er you roam like that wonderful old-fashioned Christmas.
I'd like to thank Loretta Young and the Bob Mitchell Boy Choir for being with us tonight. We hope you'll be with us next week when we celebrate New Year's Eve with Margaret Whiting, Bill Stern, and Ken Card. So until then, this is Rudy Valley saying au revoir, hasta la vista, and a very Merry Christmas to all.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
The Rudy Valley Show on Tuned 2 Yesterday from December 24th, 1946 on NBC. And that wraps this hour of Christmas programs on Tuned 2 Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great shows from radio's golden years. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levanier. Happy holidays.